disappointed.
Gunter, failing us once again at the board.
I don't know how this always happens. Why does this always happen?
Oh, it looks like Gunter's got a new intern. That's it.
All right. Anyway, all right. Let's be professional. We're professionals here. Let's get back to business.
Okay.
Hello. I'm Steve Cato.
And I'm Nicholas Miller.
And this is Kaechung Radio's own
The Talking Show.
This is Kaechung Radio, 1630 on your AM dial.
The only micro-broadcasting station in the Chinatown area.
We are the only micro-broadcasting radio station in the Chinatown area consecrated to the visual arts, or the arts in general. We are here with our lovely station manager, Johnny Jungle Guts, John Bertle, the two true crew in the studio as well.
Yeah, for the highly dedicated listeners, we apologize for a slight delay in the broadcast tonight, but there was a issue at the gate.
There was a gate issue.
We should call it the wall.
Yeah, there was an issue at the wall, and you know, I'm from Canada, so I'm like a legit wildling.
It took a giant to get us through that wall tonight. It really did.
That's very true. Our kind giant, Johnny Jungle Guts, let us in.
Yeah. Nothing like that giant from Game of Thrones who got a giant spear through him.
Poor guy. He was apparently a very important giant.
Yeah. Remarkably old or something, right?
And the last of his line, I think. Yeah.
Speaking of giants,
yeah.
Steve and I have both been watching the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Steve is rooting for his teams. I'm rooting for mine.
Your team being?
Germany, of course.
Right.
The Machine, I think, is what the commentators are calling them.
Yeah. Yeah. Das Machine. Yeah.
There was a good, for the Germany-Portugal match, there was a good intro. It was the Machine versus the Magician.
Oh, yeah. The Magician being Ronaldinho.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, I get my Portuguese speaking players confused.
Yeah, of course.
I'm always cheering for Ghana.
Yeah, me too. I'm into them.
Glutton for punishment. I only support African football. And
it's almost as painful as supporting American football.
You know, I mean, this is the funny part, is that usually by supporting like not... Yeah, it's hardly like supporting the first world when you support American football, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it is actually the same level of frustration as supporting African football. But, I mean, that said, with African football, you get the genuine pleasure of watching good playing, just without the capacity of a team to put it together. Whereas,
yeah,
you really don't get that kind of pleasure with American football.
Well, it's kind of like the complete opposite, where I feel like the American team probably has this hyper-technical level of training with absolutely no physical prowess, whereas
yeah.
The African team has the opposite.
Right, yeah. I think my key problem with American football is it's like English soccer without the gusto.
Yeah. Well, here's something I heard on the BBC, you know, our sister station.
Kaechung Radio is actually partnered with the BBC through an exchange program.
Yeah, exactly. We're just an ancillary part of the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Solomon sold it out deep.
He made millions. Have you seen his wood shop? He made out like a bandit.
He has so many pounds of... and I mean pounds in sterling, pounds sterling in rare saws in
there.
Oh
yeah, he's pumped it all into European tools. That's why they funded it. Anyhow, they were analyzing American football and why it's so terrible. And, you know, a lot of the theories are quite bad. But the one good theory that I heard was that soccer or football is a really hard sport to monetize. There aren't enough commercial breaks for the American corporations to participate in any meaningful way enough to support it as a meaningful cultural form in the U.S.
That would certainly explain baseball.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, baseball is nothing but taking a break.
And same with football. Supposedly, they say that a football match, they're American football, there are 13 actual minutes of playing.
Really?
Yeah. Compared to the 3-hour event that it is.
That is outrageous.
Amazing, right?
That is insane. 13 minutes of stuff happening?
Yep. Of actual, like, people moving around with the ball.
I'm disgusted.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm from Canada. We have the Canadian Football League. Whole different thing.
Less commercial breaks.
Less commercial breaks. Less money at stake.
less
six,
anything.
Six teams. You can hardly get a tournament together out of that. Like, everyone makes it to the finals. Essentially, like, the playoffs are for everyone.
Yeah.
There's a solid half an hour of probably a solid half an hour of football in the Canadian, but based on the difference in advertising revenues and the fact that it still takes 3 hours.
Yeah. What are the ads in Canada like?
For the CBC.
Okay.
Like for an Anne of Green Gables television series.
Right.
Something like that.
Produced by your tax dollar.
All produced by our. And the funny part about the Canadian Football League is that most of the teams are owned by their communities. So, like, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are an amalgamation of both the team from Regina and the team from Saskatoon, which, when neither could maintain financial solvency, the people of the province of Saskatchewan just bought a football team. And it's not even the government. It's like a co-op.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the Dallas Cowboys.
Really?
No. It's some billionaire.
Yeah, right. Like, and so it's like... It's actually pretty charming. Like, if you play for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, you do represent the town of Saskatchewan, or the province of the town, the province of Saskatchewan. I know Saskatchewan's a province. Sorry, everyone.
We just lost half our listeners.
Yeah, all our listeners from Saskatchewan. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So we are a micro broadcasting on Kaechung. It's a micro broadcasting radio station in Los Angeles. You can't hear this signal probably off of this block.
You can hear it on the internet.
And you can hear it on the internet. And if you're in Saskatchewan, you're hearing this, I'm so sorry. I called your province a town.
Yeah.
Your province is huge. It goes so far north and it's rectangular in shape.
Yep. Well, Steve, who do we have here tonight? I can't quite see them behind the gauze of the studio door.
It's interesting. We have a pair of women who have devised a unique system to remember anything you hear and to bring the joy of learning back. Because often one of the problems I have is I have a hard time remembering things.
Me too.
And I've also had an enduring fascination with the memory system as a terroir via Robert Ashley, Francis Yates, etc.
Mikey Snow.
You know, he's less interested in memory systems.
Oh, okay.
But
I think that's what it's all about, but I don't know it as well as you do.
No, I think mostly it's about weed. just being honest. No one from Canada is ever going to hear this. And so we have the authors of the Super Learning System here with us in the studio. And they're going to explain to us how we can remember everything.
Thank goodness.
I just can't learn computer terms.
I can look up the same word again and again, and it never sinks in.
I seem to have troubles remembering my new checking account number.
Formulas. Biology. You know, E equals MC squared, or Ohm's law, or
any facts.
Those are the trouble spots for me.
You can overcome those trouble spots.
I'd like to memorize all of Shakespeare.
Or be able to, you know, suddenly do calculus, or program a computer.
I would like to recover everything that I learned, because my experience is that 90% of what you learn in college, and I learned an enormous lot through college and graduate school, that it's all gone. It must be somewhere, but it's all gone.
Lynn Schroeder and Sheila Ostrander will show you all that knowledge is still there. It's in the reserves of your mind.
Okay, I'd like to start by telling you a story about something that happened one night a few years ago in Dubna, which is a major atomic research center in the Soviet Union. They were having an evening's entertainment, and the room was crammed full of some of the top physicists and scientists in the Soviet Union. And they were feeling a little skeptical about the man who was going to entertain them. And suddenly he appeared in the back of the auditorium. His name was Mikhail Cooney. And he shouted up to some scientists who'd volunteered to be on stage. And he said, "Okay, get busy. Start drawing circles on that blackboard. Draw as many circles as you possibly can. Let them overlap. Let them intersect. Just draw circles." So they drew and they drew and they scribbled rather furiously on an old-fashioned freestanding blackboard that was facing away from Cooney. Finally, they spun it around toward him. Before it even stopped moving, he shouted out, "167. Then what happened next was a little funny. It took a brain trust of Soviet physicists about 5 minutes to painstakingly count every circle that was on the blackboard. Sure enough, there were 167 circles. Cooney spent the rest of the evening entertaining them with his abilities at instant calculating and also talking about photographic memory. Because as he told them, he could learn very easily because anything he saw once or anything he heard once stayed in his memory and he could recall it whenever he wanted to. Demonstrations by people like Cooney in front of scientific groups sparked a drive in the Soviet Union in the middle 60s to look into people with gifts and talents. They looked at people with photographic memory. They studied instant calculators. They also studied people who could control their bodies well enough to heal themselves, to lower their blood pressure, to change their brain waves. They began to study sports stars, artists, people who were really good at inventing. They also studied people who had ESP talents. By the time Sheila and I arrived there, in the late 60s, they were saying things like, "The greatest resource of a country is the reserves of the human mind." And they would say, "Well, we're only using about 10% of our mental capabilities, and we're probably using less than 60% of our physical capabilities." Of course, by now, that's become a pretty trite statement. And in fact, scientists in America are now sort of arguing over whether we're using 2% or 1% of our abilities. But the point seems to be that there's an awful lot waiting to be used by everybody. The Russians, sort of ironically, because they're communists, seem to be rather democratic about looking for these abilities, because their philosophy was, if one person can do something, like a Cooney, maybe you and maybe I and maybe an awful lot of other people can learn how to do it. Maybe we can be trained. Maybe there's specific techniques to reach into that 90% of ourselves that we rarely use. Well, eventually, they began to develop techniques that were so powerful to help people learn that they tried to hide them from the West. Now, most Americans think this is rather funny if you say educational methodology is classified, but to some extent that is true in the communist countries. Though they may have been rather secret about the specifics, they certainly ballyhooed the results. And when Sheila and I were in Moscow, we were reading headlines in Pravda that said, "Education Revolution in Bulgaria." And this was something we'd heard about before, and it had sounded rather unbelievable, actually very unbelievable. So they were saying in Bulgaria, school children were learning a whole year's work in 2 or 3 months, and that was without homework. And adults were coming after work and learning a language in a month. They were learning 2 to 50 times faster than before. Not only that, supposedly they liked it. It made them feel good, and they got rid of stress. Well, as I said, that didn't sound too real to us at the time, but it reports about this began coming out in very prestigious journals, and eventually it was moved to some institutes in Moscow. Now, in Moscow, it was rather odd because top diplomats, people high up in the government, would come to school after work, and they weren't learning in the usual way. They were being taught to relax their bodies, to make themselves heavy and warm. They were being trained to take guided imagery trips to the seashore, to imagine they were out on the beach. They were being trained in breathing. And at the same time, when they were memorizing foreign phrases or learning new words in French or German, soft, soothing music was being played in the background. And the teacher would say to them, more or less, "Lean back and learn. Lean back, close your eyes, breathe along, don't go to sleep, but don't try too hard. Don't really concentrate. Let your mind move easily between what I'm saying and what's happening with the music." Then she would begin to recite the material they had to learn in a very specific way, in a rhythmic, paced way, as the music played behind her. And that was about all there was to it. It seemed like a very easy system for the people who were learning. And yet, they still claimed they learned up to 50 times faster, that they retained material much better than they had in other systems. Well, Sheila and I still weren't sold on the whole idea, but we decided if even a little tiny bit of this was true, think what it could mean for job retraining, for Head Start programs, for learning at home, for learning anywhere, learning in school. So we introduced the idea of accelerated learning, fast, stress-free learning, to Western readers in our book, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. Well, after that book came out, sort of a small band of rather intrepid academics set to work to develop the system in Canada and the United States. And pretty soon, out at the University of Iowa in Ames, Dr. Don Schuster found that his Spanish students could learn Spanish 3 times faster than before and without stress. And up in Toronto, Dr. Jane Bancroft, who probably is the North American expert on the subject, found that her regular French classes were suddenly experiencing heightened memory. And in Poughkeepsie, a test group for IBM used this kind of method and found that they could learn computer language 7 times faster than before. Out in Texas, at Texas Tech, Dr. Owen Caskey found again that the methods were a great help, speeded up learning for training Army recruits and for training, or at least helping, Vietnamese and Cambodians to learn English. As Dr. Abraham Maslow, the father of humanistic psychology, once said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem begins to look like a nail. And it sort of looks like that we've been using our hammer, our old form of education, to hammer out and pound out that 10% of ourselves that we've been using. But now it appears that there are new tools to help us move into the 90%. A few years ago, Sheila and I collected the best of these new tools, the best of the accelerated learning systems that are now running and being developed all across the world, and put them together under the umbrella term of superlearning. For the next few minutes, I'd like to talk to you about things that anybody can use to help themselves learning anything. Because what we're really talking about with superlearning is learning how to learn. You know, we've always, all of us, I think, been taught what to learn, but very few of us were ever taught how to learn. And there's some basic techniques that you can use to learn facts, languages, statistics, but you can also use if you're trying to learn something like public speaking or take up golf or swimming or tennis, or you're trying to become more creative or you're trying to become healthier. In fact, anything that you're trying to learn. The first thing that all of these systems have in common is that they are holistic. They want you to make use of all of your talents. In other words, they try to engage your left brain, your right brain, your emotions, and your body. Now, you've probably heard about left brain, right brain. Very generally, the left brain has to do with logical, linear, rational thinking. And our right brains have to do with metaphorical, intuitive, and creative thinking. Now, I'd say for about the last 200 years, our educational system has been solely directed to the left brain. And as some scientists said, we had become a lopheaded culture with lopheaded education. So the idea now is to get both sides of your brain involved. It's sort of like saying two heads, or at least two brains, are better than one. And the same goes for involving the body and the emotions. And you might think of this as like an orchestra. When the violins are playing, the horns and the drums don't go tootling off on their own. They play sort of a supporting role. So when you're learning something logical, like art history, memorizing facts or dates and that, yes, the left brain is featured, but you want to engage the rest of the person. Or when you're learning to play tennis, or when you're learning to be creative, again, one part, the body, the right brain, may be featured, but the rest play a supporting role. One of the points is to synchronize brain-body rhythms, to get your whole self moving in harmony. And there are many ways to do this that are built into learning systems. The use of breathing, of imagery, the use of music, the use of special exercises, anything that will help you get your whole self engaged in whatever it is you're trying to do. Another thing that all of these systems have in common is that they are stress reducing. Now, I think when most of us went to school, instead of having stress drained away when we had a course or had to study for an exam, stress got added on. And it's very important for anybody who wants to take up new forms of learning to learn how to relax. If you can learn to relax at will, you will learn anything better, and you're probably going to live a lot longer too, so it has a side benefit. Now, obviously, there are many ways to relax. There are courses, there are books, there are tapes on it, and people should try the one that is most suited to them. Some very simple ones, for example, could involve following your own breathing. Simply breathe in and breathe out. And as you're doing it, just concentrate or focus on your breathing. Another very quick way to relax is called progressive relaxation. That involves squinching up the muscles in your toes and moving up through your legs, through your whole body, clenching your whole body right to the top of your head. So basically, you're one big cramp. And then relaxing from the top down, like a sort of shower of relaxation. That will relax the body. It's sort of as one of the biofeedback doctors in this field said, that we'll go faster if we take our foot off of the accelerator. Another aspect that is common to all the new learning systems and to super learning is to recapture the joy of learning. Now, some people sort of smile when you say that because most of us don't remember our school experiences exactly joyful. However, everybody has had some good experience once in their life when they learn to do something very well. And we'd like to get the joy back in learning, to get that same feeling that you had once upon a time to happen more often, to happen when you're trying to learn almost anything. We'll show you how to recapture that joy of learning with an exercise on side B. To recap for a moment, super learning involves being holistic, trying to engage all of your abilities in whatever you're trying to do. It also involves learning how to relax your body at will and learning how to calm your mind. And it involves trying to recapture the joy of learning. Now, another key factor in super learning is the use of suggestion. Dr. Georgi Lozanov, and he was the Bulgarian doctor who really patched together or devised this for the first accelerated learning system, at least in modern times, thought suggestion was so important that he called his system suggestology. Now, as Lozanov says, from the moment you're born, things are suggested to you. How we walk, how we talk, how we dress, how we act, what we think our limits are, to a great extent, come from suggestion. Now, this can be overt suggestion or subtle suggestion from our friends, our parents, our teachers, society in general. Well, as Dr. Lozanov pointed out, even the way we write our textbooks have a certain suggestion about what our limits are. Now, if I told you, well, go home and learn one lesson, one chapter, you'd say, okay. If I said, go home and learn 30 lessons, you'd think I was crazy. So we've limited ourselves even by the way we present our information. It's another interesting story that fits in here. It's about a famous Soviet weightlifter, Vasily Alexeyev. And apparently, back in the 70s, the idea of lifting more than 500 pounds was sort of like the idea of running a 4-minute mile had been some 20 years before. Nobody seemed to be able to break the barrier. Now, Vasily was in the Olympics, and he was a very well-known weightlifter, and he had lifted 499.9 pounds, but he had never broken the 500 barrier. So one day his coach said, okay, we want you to lift to your record, to your 499.9. So he tried, and he gave a great heave, and sure enough, he lifted. Then when they weighed the weights, they took him over and said, now you look at the scale. And he did, and it was 500.5 pounds. So by the Olympics in 1976, Vasily was lifting over 556 pounds. And now all kinds of people lift more than 500 pounds. So that was a matter of limiting suggestions. This brings us to learning blocks. In super learning, we work with three kinds of blocks. There's the logical block to learning. There's the emotional block. And the ethical block. The logical block is when you say to yourself, well, it's not natural. Gee, nobody else ever learned that fast before. Why should I be expected to learn that fast? Well, this one is fairly easy to overcome because it's the rational mind. And there are two ways to look at it. If nature has given us all this equipment, which now everybody agrees is there, we have this 90%, there's probably a reason to start using it. And secondly, by now, probably almost 1 million people have used these learning systems. We don't know anybody in the West who's learning 50 times faster, as the communists claim, but we do know people all around the world, really, on 5 continents, who are learning 2 to 7 to 10 times faster and remembering. Now, anybody who really wants to look into this can look it up in the research libraries, can read many academic books and papers on the subject, coming from Japan to Australia to South Africa. So actually, you don't have to have a logical block if you want to research the subject. The tricky one, I think, is the emotional block. Now, this is something all of us have. There are things we think we can't do. Now, maybe it's because somebody made a careless remark when we were a kid and said, boy, you're clumsy. So then you might think you never could dance or you never could do some sorts of sports. For example, I don't think I can do math, though now that I've gotten into super learning, I'm trying to overcome that, because I never did very well in math. And people said, well, that's all right. Girls don't do well in math. Forget it. And I hadn't been there when they started to learn geometry. So I never did get it, but I never tried. So what I think is happening to a lot of us is that we think things are facts, and actually they may be a matter of opinion. Maybe the teaching was bad. Maybe the teacher didn't like you. Maybe there are new methods now. Maybe there was something else wrong with the way you learned. But it's a matter of opinion that you're no good at math. Now, one of the things that anybody could do who wants to learn is to make a list of what they don't think they're any good at. You know, most of us will say, gee, I can't draw, or I never was very good at poetry, or technological subjects just aren't for me. I can't warm up to a computer. Make a list and at least be aware of the blocks you have, because I think most of us go through life not realizing that we have taken suggestions and responded to them and made them come true. The third block is the ethical block, and that's the lovely old thing. If the medicine tastes good, it can't be any good. In other words, you have to suffer. You ought to strain a little if you're going to learn. It's not nice to do it in a pleasant way. Now, there are a lot of ways to overcome this. First of all, you can realize that to utilize your mind and your body efficiently, it probably is ethical. It's a waste of resources to not use it efficiently. But also, I think we've got to start beginning to understand that learning is a natural thing, that to learn is to grow, is to live, and lifelong learning is natural. I think we're set up for that psychologically and biologically, and natural things aren't supposed to be painful. If you had dinner and your stomach started to hurt, you'd think there was something wrong. If you're learning and you're hurting a little too much, it means something's blocked, something's stunting or limiting. You're limiting yourself in some way. So I think one can get over the ethical block if they consider it for a while. Now, as Lozanov had said, he probably should have named his system desuggestology, because what we've just been talking about is to desuggest oneself from the limiting suggestions that one has had throughout life. Now, there are various ways to do it. One way is by positive self-suggestion. For example, you might say to yourself, when you're in a relaxed state, it's another good reason to learn how to relax, I learn easily and well. Or you might say, I always remember everything I need to know. Now, you might say that 5 or 6 times in a relaxed state. You can make up your own, only you should remember 3 things. First, make sure you're stating your suggestion positively. Instead of saying, I do not forget, you ought to say, I do remember. Make sure you're putting them in the present tense. If you say, I will remember, we all know the future never comes. And thirdly, just while you're saying them 5 or 6 times to yourself, believe it. Suspend disbelief, as they do in the theater, and believe that it's true, just for those few seconds. And I think you're going to find you're helping yourself. So again, to recap, try to use suggestion for yourself and not against yourself. And there's one other very powerful talent that all of you have, all of us have, that can be used for rather than against yourself in learning, and that is imagination. Imagination will help you learn almost anything better. You can learn facts, you can learn languages with it, but it can particularly help you in performances. You can use mental movies and mental training to increase performance, for example, in sports, or in public speaking, or if you have to walk in and ask your boss for a raise, or if you want to get over a little anxiety you may be having about an exam. For example, if you're using a mental movie, you might do as Jack Nicklaus, the famous golfer, or Steve Stone, the Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, have done. They will sit in a calm place and they will try to run through their entire sports routine. For example, let's say you were skiing. You would sit down again, learn to relax, be in a relaxed state, and you'd run through your downhill run and skiing. You'd see yourself as if you were in a movie, and if you don't do it right, you'd stop and do it over again in the movie. Or you might remember that you're the director, so you can do it in slow motion, or you can zoom up, or you could stop the film until you get it right. After you've done this and seen it and imagined it very clearly as if it were a movie, then you move inside yourself and experience it again. This is a little tricky, but it's a great key to the effectiveness of using mental imagery. First, you see yourself as if you were in a movie skiing down the hill. Then you feel yourself doing it as if you were in a play. It's the difference between watching yourself in a movie and experiencing yourself in a play. I think probably famous sports people have always done this. There's an anecdote about Jim Thorpe, the great Indian American Olympic gold medal winner. He was on the steamboat sailing off to the 1912 Olympics, and supposedly the coach came by and said, Thorpe, why aren't you exercising? Why aren't you training with the others? And he said, as he leaned back in his deck chair, I am, coach, I am, coach. I'm watching every step I'm going to take run through my mind. So I think most people who are pretty good have just done this naturally. So to sum up, If you want to learn better, faster, there are various techniques that you can learn to help yourself. First of all, learn how to relax. That's probably one of the most important things you could ever learn in your lifetime. Also, try to recapture the joy of learning. Thirdly, try to use suggestion for yourself and not against yourself. And also, try to use your imagination, which is probably the most potent, powerful creative talent you have. Try to use that imagination for yourself and not against yourself. If you do all these things, you're going to find that you learn better, faster, and more enjoyably.
Experiments with hypnosis and brain surgery show that everything you've experienced is all there. The problem is to retrieve what you perceive.
What makes superlearning tick? That's the question we started out with when we began our journey into Russia and Bulgaria many years ago. And now, after years of experimentation, we authors have come up with a package of techniques that help you open up the riches of your tremendous potentials. It's possible now to benefit from over 20 years of scientific research that shows that there are three major components that can help you superlearn. These are music, rhythm, and relaxation. These are three powerful elements to help open up the reserves of our minds. The first major component of the superlearning system is superlearning music. Just listening to superlearning music alone has been found to improve recall. Superlearning music is really music to learn faster by. And what is it? It's a special, slow music with a very soothing, restful beat of 60 beats a minute, generally in 4/4 time and generally performed on string instruments. It's music written by composers of the 17th and 18th century, generally called Baroque music. This slow, relaxing tempo produces a state of relaxed alertness in you. It's been found to lower your blood pressure, slow pulse, slow brain waves to a soothing, restful level. And best of all, you don't have to do anything to reach this state of relaxation. This special superlearning music induces relaxation as effectively as other relaxation techniques, such as mantra meditation. The music element of superlearning. And the second key component of the superlearning system is rhythm. Learning researchers discovered a fascinating thing about your memory. They found that memory and learning improve if the material you want to learn is presented to you at a rhythmic pace. Rhythm enhances memory. It was almost as if there was a beat to memory. So now you have rhythmic data and rhythmic music developing a very powerful memory and learning capability. The third key component of the superlearning system is relaxation and rhythmic breathing. Scientists discovered if you can keep the body's motor idling while the mind is on, it should be possible to superperform. Getting the stress and anxiety out of the mind and body with superlearning relaxation techniques helps your mind function at maximum. So these three components, music, rhythm, and relaxation, all combine in a specific way to help you be a super learner.
Now, to make your own super learning lessons on any factual subject, you'll have to know two things: how to put together a super learning music tape, and how to divide your material in a special way that helps you remember better. First, the music. You'll want a 20-minute tape of super learning music. Superlearning music is Baroque string concerto music from the 17th and 18th century. Some examples of composers of this music are Bach, Vivaldi, Corelli, and Telemann. Specifically, superlearning relies on just the slow movements of Baroque concertos. Those are called largo movements, and here's a sample. ¶¶ want to get together records of 4 or 5 Baroque concertos. With your tape recorder, record only the slow movements of these concertos, which usually last about 3 to 4 minutes. At the end, add one fast Allegro selection lasting about 3 minutes. In all, make a tape of about 20 minutes. That's the right amount of music to do a super learning session. Here are our suggestions to make your super learning music tape. The first is Vivaldi, the winter movement from Four Seasons. The second, Bach, air for the G string. The third is Bach, harpsichord concerto in F minor. And the fourth, Vivaldi, guitar concerto in D major. So those are our suggestions. Do not substitute any other type of music when you do a super learning session. This special Baroque music we've told you about aids relaxation and produces a state of relaxed concentration, making it easier to learn. So that's the music you need to super learn. Now here's how you can prepare your material to super learn something yourself or teach someone else. First of all, divide your material into bits that fit into approximately 4-second frames. About 9 words fit in a 4-second frame. You'll find that school or college review notes are often already divided into easy-to-remember fragments. The lesson consists of 4 seconds of spoken information, followed by 4 seconds of silence, followed by 4 seconds of information, and so on. Sheila Ostrander will give you an example of how to organize your material.
For example, if you had to memorize language vocabulary, here's the way you'd go about it. You just put down the word in English and then its translation. Rabbit, le lapin. Then 4 seconds of silence. 1, 2, 3, 4. If you were doing math, you're going to have a definition, for example. Let's say in trigonometry, rectangle. A parallelogram with 4 right angles. Then 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds of silence. If you had to memorize times tables, you would be putting in each framework 2 times 2 is 4. Then the space of 4 seconds. So you see you have a frame of data and a frame of silence. A frame of data, a frame of silence. One more tip we found is a great memory booster is that if you're reading your data onto tape to be played back later, or if you're reading it to a friend, if you can read the data in different intonations, it helps avoid monotony. The 3 intonations that we found helpful are normal, confidential, conspiratorial tone, and a very assertive, tough tone. You'll hear a sample of this coming up.
So what you'll do is record your material on a cassette in 4-second frames followed by 4 seconds of silence. In super learning, lessons are first heard without music. Then the exact same lesson repeats with music. Try starting with shorter lessons, 30 to 40 new data units. Then, as the super memory effect snowballs, go on to longer sessions. If you don't want to record, simply arrange your material in fragments, ready for a friend to read to you. That's all you have to do to put a program together. To learn with this method is very easy. Now we're going to guide you through a mini super learning session to give you an idea of what it's like to do one. To begin, you'll go through the Art of Learning relaxation routine. This will help you learn anything, but it's particularly effective for factual learning and memory. Start by tensing and relaxing your muscles from your toes up to your head until you're very relaxed. Next, imagine yourself on an escalator riding down through a rainbow of colors. Begin with the bright red 7th floor of a building, then glide down through orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, into ultraviolet on the 1st floor. Then, there are mind-calming exercises. Imagine yourself at a lake, or by a seashore, or in a forest. Any place in nature you feel tranquil and relaxed. When you're first starting out, do this Art of Learning relaxation routine every day for about a week, without even doing a super learning session. Spend about 20 minutes. This will ensure that your mind is receptive to learning. As you get more experienced at relaxing, you'll be able to trim the exercise time to about 5 minutes. Then, every time you do a super learning session, you'll first do this relaxation routine. Now, I'm going to guide you through the last exercise of this routine, one you should do just before you start to super learn. It's called the joy of learning. Now, remember some time in your life when you really felt good about learning or accomplishing something. It can be in the present or in the past. It might be a time when you got a new insight from a fascinating book, movie, or new piece of music. It might be a time when you accomplished something special in a craft, hobby, or sport. It could be the day you passed your driver's test, or the day you first rode a bike by yourself, or learned to cook a special treat. It might be a time when you won a prize. Think about it. Now, let your eyes close and try to imagine again this enjoyable experience. Replay the sense of eagerness and excitement about learning and discovering that you had. Be back there again. Reconstruct the scene. Where are you? Are you sharing the experience with anyone? Try to recapture just how it felt physically. What was your breathing like? Were you smiling? Sense again your feeling about the pleasure that learning gave you. Right now, enjoy sensing how your mind, memory, and body functioned with ease. Savor it. Hold on to that joy of learning feeling and let it flow through you during a super learning session or at any time you want to accomplish something. Now, open your eyes, stretch, and be back in the present. Okay, you've done your art of learning relaxation routine. Now you're ready to learn your material. The session is in two parts. You'll go through the same lesson twice, first without music, and then with music. On the first run-through, silently read along with the material on a sheet of paper or book as a voice recites it rhythmically. When the lesson is finished, put on the special super learning music and repeat the exact same lesson. But this time, lean back, relax, close your eyes, and just let your mind move between the words and the music. If possible, try to hold your breath when you hear the data spoken. Breathe out and in during the 4-second pauses. Your breathing will automatically become rhythmic. Here's what a mini lesson sounds like. As an example, we've chosen gourmet menu terms. You know, those fancy words you always forget the meaning of in restaurants.
Sauce Mornay, cheese sauce. Newberg, sherry cream sauce. Florentine with spinach. Scallopini, thin slices of meat, usually veal. Clams Casino, baked whole with bacon. Quiche Lorraine, bacon egg pie. Sauce Mornay, cheese sauce. Newberg, sherry cream sauce. Florentine with spinach. scallopini, thin slices of meat, usually veal. Clams casino, baked whole with bacon. Quiche Lorraine, bacon egg pie.
To know to do your own super learning. After these last thoughts from Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder, you'll find some super learning music, the music that reduces stress and helps you learn faster.
Now you know what a super learning lesson sounds like, and now you have the three basic components that can help open up some of the reserves of mind. And from 15 years of experience with these methods, my colleague Lynn and I know that they really do work.
I think what intrigues me most is wondering what other talents we're going to find in that famous 90% that lies in waiting for us. We know that you can improve your ability to learn, to memorize, to have a superlative sports performance, and perhaps even self-healing. But I wonder what other talents are lying in wait for us. We now have some techniques to start everybody off, ourselves and you included, into that 90%. I hope we do. I know we can. It reminds me of a quote by a famous American who lived around the turn of the century, scientist and artist Walter Russell. He said, "Mediocrity is self-inflicted, but genius is self-bestowed."
You'd like to know more about Superlearning, just write to Superlearning, New York City, New York. The rest of the program is Superlearning music.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Double wow.
I feel like I might have learned a lot.
I can't remember.
Interesting.
Although I will say that I love Baroque music.
Right. How do you feel about only the largo sections of Baroque music?
A little slow. A little slow for my taste.
But, I mean, abstracted from the rest of a body of work.
Take a piece
of music.
I'm not so persnickety about listening to all the movements in a piece of music. I'll take a string quartet I like and just pick out the movement I like and listen to that over and over again and not feel super weird about it.
Right. Do you feel like that hurt you in your past life as a composer?
It destroyed me.
Right.
Yeah.
What did they call you?
I didn't have a special name.
They weren't like dilettante.
No, because actually, I think the fact that I even listened to any string quartets made me supremely cool.
Oh, right.
Like everyone was like, you know, like a very well classically trained violin player, but then like really just listened to Radiohead, you know?
Oh, I see. Right. Like they didn't actually listen to any of that music.
No, they all really just wished they were at the new, Jay-Z program at USC?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, the Beats program.
Right, where like you learn how to design headphones and make really thick beats.
Right.
And it's more about your haircut than about, modal harmony or something.
I understand.
Yeah.
So, super learning. Lynn Schroeder, Sheila Ostrander, on the radio, trying to, pardon me, tell us that you could remember anything you've ever encountered. That's all in there. Do you believe that?
No.
Why not?
I feel like memory is like the way that YouTube clips load.
Uh-huh.
But there are just, you know, there's a couple different types of memory. Uh-huh. So you have like bigger buffers.
Right.
All constantly moving, but there's like a back end of every buffer that's moving forward.
Uh-huh.
And like some of like the deep memories get fractured into newer ones, and so they persist in their own way. But I'm more like Proust, like, you know, you eat like a weird thing and that reminds you of like the way your mom smelled when you were four.
Right. But I mean, that's a whole part of their mnemonic system, right? Is that you have to remember a smell, like the smell of success,
rather than just the language.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and then the other part of the program, of course, is just like totally Baroque music.
I like that part.
Like nonstop 60 BPM Baroque music.
Yeah. So the people that work in those fancy perfume shops in Beverly Hills, do they have really great memories?
I wonder, right? Because in a way, like when I was in sound reinforcement as a profession, music meant less to me then than it had ever meant to me at any given time in my life. And all I did was make music louder. My whole job was setting up PA systems and making music go from quiet to loud. So maybe to those people, it's just a living.
Yeah.
But I think maybe This is the thing. There's one guy who works at one of those perfume shops in Beverly Hills. And he's the best. He's really good. He sells more perfume than anyone else. He understands the stock better than any other clerk. And to him, it's always this like Proustian moment. He's having that Proustian experience every minute.
I bet it's more like the way that work sucks everything out of everything. So these people's theory that maybe you have to remember the smells to really be able to access those deep memories.
Right.
So every memory he's ever had has been absorbed into some sort of working experience at his perfume shop. So it all has this cold chill of being at work.
Right.
So he actually has no memories anymore outside of work.
Or no memories with smells.
No memories with smells. So like he can hear a largo of a Baroque music and he remembers like all sorts of things, like, you know, fields of fancy with, through his childhood. But if he smells the same smell of the perfume his mother wore or like some field of roses he went through with his father, he's fucked.
I think that's definitely the case because that's entirely how music works. Like having briefly professionalized through music, like I can almost exclusively hate music. it's pretty odd. I mean, like, you know, I still do it. I like it a lot, sure, but you know, boy, you know, there's almost nothing worse
than music.
Yeah. I mean, for me on Earth, no, there's so much that's worse than there's, you know, mass killings. There's like, you know, missing Nigerian schoolgirls. There's like all kinds of stuff that's terrible.
Yeah.
But
you think music's up there?
No, you know, music's just my problem.
Your problem, okay.
My cross to bear.
Yeah.
First world problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all know that I have problems with music.
Yeah. No, I was trying to goad you. I was trying to push you into.
I caught that ball. It was too heavy to toss around.
You jerk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Lynn. Thanks, Sheila. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Nicholas.
It's always great to be here, especially with the station manager, Mr. Jungle Guts, and some other two true cast hanging around to entertain us during the downtime.
Yeah, yeah. Very lively green room in this this edition.
Yeah. Erotic. Erotic.
Oh, it was. Yeah, definitely. There were some lewd magazines circulating. It was quite the time here at K-Charm.
But unfortunately, we can't share those things over the radio. They must be seen.
Speaking of seeing, good one, Nicholas. This Saturday, Sabado. Sabado. We have the talking show at the Hammer Museum, 3:15 p.m., or 4:15 p.m.
After the World Cup. That's all that matters.
After the World Cup, yeah, you come to the Hammer, and we have Andrew Norman Wilson, his second time on the talking show.
Yep.
His first time on the talking show on TV.
Yep.
The first time the talking show is on TV.
Right.
We will be holding it down at the Hamster. He'll be doing his thing. His friend Sam will be playing music alongside him. Controversial.
Yeah.
And I understand that there'll be some great costumes as well.
Yeah. And you know, there's been a lot of posts flying around the K-Chung forum about how gorgeous Steve and I actually are. And for the first time you'll get to actually
That's true.
You can come and check it out.
You've probably heard about it through rumors because Los Angeles is a small town, but now we'll be on TV. And we'll see if the camera does add an extra 10 pounds, as they say.
Yep.
Not like it'll make much of a difference. It'll probably mostly fall in our biceps area or my well-formed glutes.
Yep. And maybe we'll even do some dim sum before the show to make it an extra
20. NBD, yeah, because we don't care.
We don't.
We can do push-ups till the cows come home.
Yep.
So this Saturday, make your way out to the Hammer. We'll be doing our K-Chung TV bit with Andrew Norman Wilson for the Made in L.A. Biennial, curated by Connie Butler and Michael Ned Holte. Good night, everyone.
Sleep tight.